change around my team. Yeah, we off the leash. You could look us in the eyes, see we have peace. Black and gold, that's the colors when we go to war. When we step up on that field, you gon' hear my roar. We them tiger cats, we them tiger cats. We them tiger cats, we them tiger cats.
Yeah, nobody hitting harder, better keep your guard up. Cause with everything we draw, we can score it when we wanna.
Welcome to Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham.
Mike, we usually shoot the S word for a little bit at the top of the show, but we just got to kind of get into this one. In your wildest dreams, did you ever think a week ago when we were talking about game two of the season heading to Toronto to play the Argos that we'd be sitting here talking about, and this is not wrong, this is not, we're not misspeaking, a 64-14 win?
No, not at all. I thought this game was going to be a close affair, and I believe we talked about that last week. I believe that, you know, we were a little bit worried about this game. You know, this first game of the season for the Argos, you know, the unknown factor, is James Franklin going to be able to move the ball? Is he going to be effective? You know, there's a lot of good players on the Argonaut offense and defense, and no, not in my wildest dreams did I expect a 64-14 win for the Tiger Cats, the biggest margin of victory between these two teams in history. And it's a long history, Josh. So this is a pretty historic game, and it was a pleasure to watch.
Well, it was the largest loss the Argos have ever suffered, ever.
Oh, wow.
And this is a team that traces its roots back to nearly 150 years ago. So they've never lost by 50 points. The Ticats have only previously once won by 50 points, and that was in 1999 when they beat the Winnipeg Blue Bombers 65-15. And we all remember what 1999 gave us. So a lot of stuff here that you've really never seen before. And actually, it's funny, when I was looking up sort of like largest margins of victory and all that sort of stuff, Ticats scored 60 points twice in 99. They did it against the Bombers, and they also scored 63, I think it was, against the Saskatchewan Roughriders. So, I don't know, maybe we're going to see, if things are, you know, 20 years later, if we're going to see another 60-point outing, I'd be thrilled. But it's not just the points, Mike. 604 yards of offense, 161 of it on the ground, 443 of it through the air. This team dominated on offense, on defense, on special teams. It's like, honestly, the day for the Argos started really well. They had a very nice ceremony for Ricky Ray. I don't know how much of that was shown on TSN, but I got to see
all
the whole thing. Oh, they showed the whole thing?
All of it.
It was,
yeah.
It was really nice. Very, you know, very, felt very Ricky Ray like, very subdued. Not, you know, wasn't overly, you know, flamboyant or anything. It just, they showed the highlight package. Jim Popp said some words. Ricky Ray said some words. Very short and very, very much felt like something that Ricky Ray would have wanted. So everyone, you know, all the Argo fans that were there, and it was a pretty decent crowd. I think there was around 16, 17,000 people there. Now, obviously, there were a lot of Ticat fans, so that's not a surprise. But I thought it was a pretty decent crowd. And things looked, they were looking pretty good for the Argos. And then the coin toss happened. And then from then on out, it was all Hamilton. Like, it was, this was a beating that I, outside of, like, I can't think of one time I've seen the Ticats, and I know we mentioned 99, but I don't know about you, but I don't remember every game from 1999.
No, and it's hard to remember when every game wasn't televised, right? So maybe those two games weren't even on TV.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So when you think about it, I can't think of, we always bring it up, that 2015 team and that run they went on in the summer that year and how good they were. Even they didn't do something like this. Like, they didn't take a team to the woodshed and beat them by 50. And I remember last year, Ticats, like, they went into Montreal and Johnny Manziel started and they beat the Owls by like 40 something or whatever it was. But 64 total points, 50-point margin of victory. The Argos don't get a touchdown until what's quite literally garbage time. It was the game was over, and they march down the field and they score a major. It was just dominance in every facet of the game and in every possible definition of the word.
Yeah, I mean, three quarters of pure dominance for sure. You know, you end the first quarter, it's 3-3. Nothing much going on in this game, but then the second starts. You know, Simone gets that interception, and, from there on out, it's all Tiger Cats. They outscore them 17-3 in the second, 21-0 in the third, and 23-8 in the fourth. So there was no looking back after the second quarter started, and it was a beautiful thing. You know, it was just every facet of the game, they were 10 times better than the Argonauts.
So let's break this down. Usually we do things a little differently here, but because, let's be honest, if we sit here and tell you about the things that we disliked about this game, we'd be assholes. I'm not going to mince words here. I'm sorry, but your team wins by 50. They score 64. They beat your biggest rival by the largest margin they've ever been beaten by in franchise history. I'm not going to sit here and say, well, you know, there was a little bit too much pressure on the quarterback, or, oh, you know, the first quarter and a bit weren't that great. Nah, nuts to that. This was an ass kicking. We're going to sit here and we're going to gloat about this ass kicking. We're going to talk about all the things that were great about this ass kicking. And let's start with the offense. And let's start with the quarterback. I thought Jeremiah Mazzoli was absolutely freaking phenomenal in this one. Look at the numbers, Mike. I'm sure you have them in front of you, but for those of you who are listening that obviously don't, the numbers are there. 23 of 31, 74% completion percentage, 338 yards, 3 touchdowns, 1 interception. He adds 15 yards rushing on the ground with another touchdown. That's the MOP Jeremiah Mazzoli that we saw last year, and I thought he played out of his mind in this one.
Yeah, what a bounce back game from last week. You know, like last week, you know, the numbers were down. I think he had 167 yards passing, no interceptions, one touchdown. But this game, you know, you could just feel that he had that rhythm. You know, he was comfortable in the offense again after the first quarter, because I thought he had a shaky first quarter. There was that one interception that, made me a little concerned. But after that, man, it was all Jeremiah Mazzoli. He was on fire with everyone in this offense. You know, it was just really fun to watch. And I thought he had great protection from the offensive line once again. If he can just sit back there in the pocket and go through his reads, this offense is going to be stellar this season.
I thought he had a lot of time. I thought when he was pressured, he made some really good decisions. The one that you, I'm sure, watching at home, didn't really think was going to go much, but when you're in the live crowd, I can see how the play's developing. You knew it was going to be a touchdown. Was when he's basically on his back and he throws a touchdown
right
to the young rookie Nikola Kalinic. When you're in the stands, as soon as he let go of the ball, we looked where it was going and we saw that he was open. There was 10 yard halo around him. There was no one close to him, and it's like, oh, he's going to score. Like, watching on TV, I imagine you're going, what the hell are you doing? Because
why wouldn't I thought that you? Was going to be a pick, for sure.
Exactly, but he was just so phenomenal in this game, making throws that other quarterbacks simply can't make. Just top to bottom, there's no complaints about it. Even the interception he threw, Brandon Revenberg, being the baller that he is, strips the ball right and gets the ball back. Like, that's the thing, too, is there were two turnovers in this game by the Ticats. There was that interception, and there was the Brandon Banks fumble. And both times, the defense, or in the interception's case, the offense, made a play to get it back. Banks fumbled on a drive that was looking that it was going to move downfield. On the very next drive by the Argos, that's when Simone gets the interception that essentially completely turned this game around. That happened 6 minutes in, or six was 6 minutes left in the second quarter, and the score was 6-3. By the end of the half, it was, I believe it was 20-6, and they're off and running. And then from then on out, it was this team scored 7 straight touchdowns on 6 offensive drives. And no, that's I didn't say that wrong. They scored 6 offensive touchdowns, and they had a missed field goal return for a touchdown. Like, they said on the broadcast I heard when I rewatched the game that since 2007, when they started keeping track of this, they couldn't find any other team that had ever done that. Like, that is what we were talking about in this game. We're talking about historical, like, six straight touchdown drives that didn't take, like, they were scoring, none of their touchdown drives, we just looked it up before the show, none of their touchdown drives lasted longer than 4 minutes. They were efficient, they were quick, and they were deadly.
Yeah, they were taking chunks of yardage at ease. I mean, it was – I couldn't believe what I was watching. The way the offense was rolling, it just – they made it look easy on the field. And that was quite the performance. Now, what do you think about our running back, Sean Thomas Erlington?
Beast, man. He's a beast. He's at this. I know it's two games into the season, so I know we're getting ahead of her. Some teams have only played one game. He's the clubhouse leader for most outstanding Canadian right now. He was – look at these numbers. Mike, listen to these numbers. 12 carries, a 109. That's a 9.1-yard average. And he adds three catches for 56 yards, including that one, which was just freaking tremendous, where he dives out for the ball and just makes one of those – well, it literally was. I saw it on SportsCenter. It was the highlight of the night. Like, that's one of those – out of these world catches. Mike, every week now, this has been two straight weeks where this guy has proven that he is starting tailback material. And then even when he gets nicked up, they throw Malik Irons in there. What does he do? First two carries, picks up 18 yards on two carries, and scores his first career touchdown. This team is running the football well. They are committed to running the football, and they're doing a hell of a job with it.
Yeah, I mean, how could you not be committed to running the football with that offensive line? Sean Thomas Erlington is an amazing running back. He's doing a great job, but the O-line is making it easier for him, obviously. He's just impressing me all around. You know, you mentioned the catches, that great catch, you know, the running, and then they showed some replays where he was throwing blocks as well in the backfield. So this kid can do it all, and it's, you know, you think he's injured again. He comes back into the game in the third quarter, and he rips off a 52-yarder. I mean, he just came back, and it was like he was never hurt at all. So this kid's tough, he's talented, and he's durable. So I can't say enough about him.
And speaking of the offensive line, I think any idea that Mike Filer shouldn't be the starting center, I know they went with Rainey, the kid last week, and then he's been dealing with some personal things, so he wasn't here this week. And Filer might still be a little nicked up, but come on. After what we saw this week, there's no way that Filer can get taken out of the lineup. I think he was that glue that made this line even better this week than they were a week ago. And I thought they were pretty decent last week against the Riders, but this week against the Argos, they were out of this world.
Yeah, it's no great sacks. To have him
again,
back.
No sacks. So now we've had two games, and Mazzoli's been sacked once, and it was on a scramble where he didn't see the defender because he was looking downfield to make a throw. One sack in two games? Like, I'll take it.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, those are like 98, 99 numbers with Danny Mack in the backfield. So, I mean, if we can keep this pace going, we're gonna cruise. If it would two sack or one sack every two games, I mean, I'll sign up for that.
Braylon Addison, we got to talk about him first off when we talk about the receivers. We had the Brian Timms conversation last week and in the car ride on the way to the game. One of the seatmates that I had there said that she thought Braylon Addison was going to have a huge game. Boy, did he ever. Yeah. Six catches, 107, three tugs, three scores. I mean, the Brian Timms comparison's got to go out the window because I think last week, it seems for this entire offense, was a bit of an anomaly outside of Sean Thomas Erlington. Everyone came to play in this. Braylon Addison stepped up. Huge game. Brandon Banks being Brandon Banks, man. 105 yards on seven catches. Adds the 113-yard missed field goal return. I mean, what can you say about with Luke Tasker out of the lineup, those guys stepped up big time. And so did some of the other guys. Marcus Tucker,
yeah.
Five catches for 76 yards. Jalen Acklin, five catches for 59 yards. Like, everyone contributed. But the big one, I think, the guy that we have to give the most praise to, Braylon Addison.
Yeah, Braylon Addison is, the former Oregon Duck puts on a show. I don't think this guy is a one-year fluke, Josh. I think he's the real deal, and he's going to be a great receiver for the Ticats. And, you know, shout out to, I believe it was Marcus Tucker who was filling in for Luke Tasker in his position.
Did a
if
great
I'm
job.
Correct.
Yeah, you're
he did. He did a really good job. You know, you mentioned the numbers: 5 catches, 76 yards. A good job by Mazzoli spreading the ball out to different receivers. Obviously, Kalinich with his first career touchdown. Our boy Mike Jones has been a little quiet throughout the first two games. It doesn't look good for my most outstanding Canadian pick, but maybe he'll pick it up as the season goes along. But overall, a great game for all the receivers in the lineup.
Well, you're going to have, at least based on my estimations, based on what we've seen so far, you might have the right team for most outstanding Canadian, just maybe right. not the right player. Yeah, we got to talk about Nikola Kalinic. This is a guy who we talked about, who I asked people about when he was drafted 10th overall by the Ticats this past June, or May, sorry. Said special teams demon, played some slot back at York, but they didn't expect to see much of him. Don't expect to see much of him on the offensive side of the ball in the pros. He's going to be a special teams ace. And yet the Ticats are finding a way to use him. Yeah, he only had one catch, but it was for 31 yards and a touchdown. But he's playing tight end, which is a position you don't see guys play. Like, when's the last time you can remember there being a CFL team that used with any frequency a tight end? It's been a very, very long time.
None that I can remember.
Kid's like 6'2", 6'3", like 240 pounds. Like, he's a bit of a matchup nightmare for some of those smaller Sam linebackers and defensive backs that we have in the CFL, because a lot of quicker players in the CFL than in the United States. But to have a guy that's that size that can go out there and can catch, like, he's going to make a pretty decent red zone threat, I got to think, because he's a guy at that size that can just go up and get it. And there's not many DBs in the CFL that can match up with his size and his frame. So I know it was only one catch. It was a big one. I know he got a lot of publicity because of his buddies in the stands freaking out, and that's great stuff. But I think it's going to be interesting to see his development over the course of the season and see what he can do more on the offensive side of the football. But yeah, Marcus Tucker, I think, is a guy we have to talk about a little bit. Comes in. We mentioned him last week. I talked about he contributed with a couple of great tackles on special teams. Gets a chance to play, Mike, and he's the one that kind of got the ball rolling, if I'm not mistaken. I believe it was after the Simone interception. He gets like a 40, 50-yard catch that sets him up for their first touchdown, and then that's what started that run that I mentioned of the six possessions where they scored touchdowns and then the missed field goal touchdown in there as well. So he kind of makes that big play that sort of sets this team up to go on the roll they did to get this game to a 64-14 final. So lots of good stuff from the receivers in this one.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to seeing Luke Tasker back in the lineup to add to all these receivers. And you got a guy that we signed recently who could also really add to this offense if he's healthy, and we'll talk about him later. But, you know, the receivers are looking pretty good for this team right now.
It was funny, after the game, someone I was with wanted to get something signed, so we went and hung out where the players leave the stadium, and Luke Tasker came out. Everyone's like, man, we know, we can't wait to have you back, you know, we need you out there. And he's like, wait, do we? Did you watch the game? Like, I don't think they do. Like, obviously being self-deprecating, obviously everyone's having a good laugh. When you win by six, when you win by 50 and you score 64, and I'm going to be repeating that a lot because it's still dumbfounding to me that that's actually what happened. You can be like that, but I thought it was pretty funny when he's like,
it's a good story.
let's flip over to the defense. Let's talk about what we saw there. Let's go with the defensive line first and foremost. I think that they were good. Obviously, they got a lot of pressure. I think there were four sacks in this game, if I'm not mistaken. I think this was, again, Jagaire Davis been a little quiet. Don't really see a ton from him. I don't even know if he's on the stat sheet, if I'm being honest here. I don't
see him.
Yeah, so he didn't register. So he's had a little bit of a slow start to the season, but that's okay. You know, I thought Adrian Tracy looked really good in his return to the lineup. Ted Laurent, as I mentioned, had a sack. Dylan Wynn was kind of all over the place. I feel like, even though the numbers aren't really there for the D-line in this one, I felt that they did enough to disrupt the Argos offense that sort of allowed them, like, it allowed other guys to make plays. Simone Lawrence has an interception. Other guys get sacks. So I feel like Lawrence himself had a sack. We'll talk about Simone in a bit. I don't know. I thought defensive line played decently in this one and did enough to sort of make the rest of the defense kind of click.
Yeah, I mean, you don't have to have, 10 sacks a game for the defensive line to have a good performance, and I thought they did. I thought there was pressure on the quarterback, and we have to mention that James Wilder Jr. only had 12 yards rushing, and I think the defensive line had a little something to do with that. So that was a great thing to see. So yeah, there. I mean, the numbers weren't gaudy for the defensive line, but I still think they did a good job, disrupting the run game and getting pressure on James Franklin.
Yeah, Richard Leonard had one of the best tackles in this game. They pitched one out to Wilder in the flat, and it was I think it was a run play. And he was kind of all by himself, and Leonard was out there with him, made a great low tackle to, like, I think the Argos lost, like, 6 or 7 yards in that one. Yeah. I think the very next play after that was a sack. I think it was Big Teddy had a sack on the very next play. So it was like it just kind of snowballed from there, right? Like, one guy makes a play, and then another guy makes a play, and it kind of coming from everyone. Like,
okay, so James. I get it. You have abs.
Oh, this okay, was.
But you, why? Again, he had his jersey up around his nips.
That's like, that's got to be a fine, right? Like, fine. I used to you hear think, about guys.
Are you special?
Fined. Yeah,
you're not special.
Yes, no, he's all very right, special. Right. He's very okay. special. He has all he right. has his own taunt, and he has his own logo mm-hmm. that he wears everywhere, and he's going to be a WWE superstar. Of course, he's special.
Okay, but he. He has all that, and he has 12 yards rushing. He doesn't perform on the field. I mean, it's all image, bro. It's all image.
And he has
I think that's
not
the first
really...
time I've said bro on this podcast.
Yeah, let's make that the that's last not... time anyone says okay. bro on this podcast. Right. He has not played well against the Ticats. Like, I can't remember a game against Hamilton where he has really dominated. And it's kind of the opposite. I should have mentioned this earlier. Jeremiah Mazzoli's a bit of an Argo killer. I'm pretty sure it's what I wrote on 3-down. He's like 6-1 in his career against the Argos. He's averaging over 300 yards passing per game. I think he's got like 20 some odd touchdowns, so only like 5 interceptions. Like, he crushes the Argos. And the inverse of that is James Wilder. I don't think he's ever had anywhere close to like a 100-yard game against the Ticats in any of the games they've played. So it was no surprise to me to see him have a bad game. But speaking of that, and I'm actually glad you brought it up, talk about a complete 180 from the run defense from a week before. They got gashed by William Powell and Marcus Thigpen in the run game against the Riders. And in this one, let's look at the numbers here, Mike. They hold the Argos to... Oh, it was Wilder's 12 yards rushing. That's all. Yeah. That was all they had. 12 yards rushing a week after giving up like 160. That's a pretty impressive turnaround.
Yeah, that's a pretty good bounce back for the Ticats defense. I'm surprised... They really didn't try to run it at all. That's it, eh? Just James Wilder, 6 carries, 12 yards.
Yep.
That's a sad stat line for the Argonauts right there, especially when, James Wilder, he's like, he's your star player, one of the, like, probably your star player. You're trying to push out into the public's eye, and he just hasn't been good for quite a while, actually. I don't remember his last big game. But anyways, I'll stop going after James
Wilder. Yeah, no, lot of hype with Wilder, and the production really hasn't matched it. But, now that we say that, he's going to go off for a 140 and 2 touchdowns against the Riders. So
yeah, probably.
Maybe we're going to motivate him. Speaking of motivated, yeah. Simone Lawrence seemed like he was ready to be shot out of a cannon in this one. We'll get into all the off-field stuff about Simone a little later. But in this game, the stats aren't huge. He goes 1-1-1, but those ones are 1 tackle, 1 interception, and 1 sack. So, if you're gonna have a quiet night, you have a pretty loud one when only you have a pick and a sack. So, I thought in this one he made some big plays, and I think we can credit his pick. Like I said, with 6 minutes left in the second quarter, with the game a 6-3 lead for the Ticats, it's kind of the turning point in this game, because from then. That's when the team really started to take off.
Yeah, Simone really had a great game against the Argonauts, and you could argue if he should be playing or not, but he was on the field. So, it's not like he's just going to give up and be like, oh, I should be suspended, so maybe I won't give full effort. I thought he had a great game, and, that's the Simone we know, right? A hard-hitting player who gives tons of effort, not a dirty player, but very high effort guy. So that was a pleasure to see.
I think we also have to give some love to the secondary, Mike, in this one. Darrell Walker, SJ Green, Armani Edwards, none of them cracked the 100-yard barrier. Edwards found the end zone very late in this contest. SJ Green, tie cat killer, 5 catches, 53 yards, and a pretty quiet 53 yards, quite frankly. I don't remember hearing his name called an awful lot. Darrell Walker, 4 catches for 67 yards. Outside of the very first play of the game, I don't really recall him doing all that much in the game. Like, he had 42 yards as a long, so I think that was a deep pass, maybe sometime in the second quarter, but not a ton out of him. It was his bobblehead night. I got a Darrell Walker bobblehead. I don't know what I'm going to do with it because I don't.
That's cool.
I mean, it is cool. I'm not really a bob. I have two bobbleheads. I have that one, and I have an old Kevin Glenn one. So I don't know. Maybe we'll give it away on the show one time to an Argo fan that listens. Although after the drubbing we're going to give the team in this one, I can't imagine too many Argo fans listen to it. But to be able to keep those two guys, and if you want to add Edwards, those three guys at bay, I think speaks a lot to how well the Ticats secondary played in this one.
Yeah, I think that our secondary is very talented bunch, and they can shut down some guys. I mean, we have the talent in that secondary to really shut down star players, as we saw. I mean, Darrell Walker, one of the best in the league. You know, he had that one big play, but other than that, was pretty darn quiet. I like our defense as a whole, Josh. You know, I like the secondary. I like the linebackers. I like the defensive line. I think this group could be a very dominant one, shutting down receivers, and, you know, we shut down the run game. So I'm hoping that we can do that to other teams going forward, maybe teams that are a little bit more feared in the league. So we shall see what happens with that. But you know, going forward, I'm pretty confident in this group.
Yeah, it almost feels like the defense, as good as the individual players are, and there are some all-star level players in this defense, it almost feels like after this one that, like, the whole is better than the sum of its parts. Like, we talk about, you know, the pass rush didn't really get there. They created some pressure and maybe made for some errant throws, but what they really excelled in this one was stopping the run. And maybe that was by design. Maybe they're like, let's let James Franklin try to beat us with his arm because we know he can't. I don't know what they're thinking. This is just me kind of riffing. And they say, okay, we know they're going to go heavy with James Wilder. Let's take him out of the game, which they did. It was helped off, obviously, by the offense scoring as much as they did. When you score 6 straight touchdowns, like, it's hard for a team who's down by that many points. Like, teams don't score 6 touchdowns in a game, let alone 6 on 6 straight drives. You know what I mean? So when teams get that far down, the running game's kind of non-existent, so the line can kind of pin back its ears, and it's easier to be a little tighter in your coverage, because even if you get beat, you're not worried about, like, oh man, this bomb's gonna beat me and really alter the game. Come on, when you're up 52 points, it doesn't really make a difference if you get beat deep. You know what I mean? So maybe the score kind of dictated how well this team or how well this defense had a chance to kind of play. But I mean, you look at the stats the Argos put up and you just can't just help but marvel at how well the defense as a whole in this game played.
Yeah. They took everything away. And even the numbers with the receivers, I mean, Monty Edwards had 73, but that was a lot of that was in one of the last drives of the game when the Ticats defense was kind of laying back. So yeah, complete dominant performance by this defense, shutting down on paper a talented group of players from the Argonauts on the offense. So Mikey likey.
Yeah. What did Mikey think of Rico's pick six with zeros on the clock to put it 64-14? Because I've heard some takes and I've seen some people say, like, oh, we should have taken a knee. And I don't know, maybe if I was on the opposite end of this, if this was the Argos beating the Ticats 64-14, I might be a little salty. So I'm not going to hold it against any Argo fans for being salty about it. But to me, this is professional football. You don't take plays off. Rico has no idea if he's ever going to get into the end zone again. And, you know, he's an ex-Argo. Maybe he wants to stick it to him. Like, I don't know. I can see both sides of it, but since it came out for us on the positive side, yeah, I'm all for it.
Yeah, I'm all for it too. I really, really wanted to get to 60 points.
Oh, me too. Dude, when they were out, it was like 55-6, I think, at one point, and they settled for that field goal. And I literally turned to the people I was sitting with and go, ah, we're not going to get 60. I really wanted to see 60.
Yeah, I don't blame him at all. I mean, the ball came right into his hands. There was nobody in front of him. There was no risk of being injured or anything like that. All he had to do was stroll into the end zone, and that's the end of the game, and that's exactly what he did. And I don't hold it against him at all, because you never know. You know, the point differential could come into effect. You know, we play this team three times, and maybe we get Pete 64-14 the next game, and then the points will come into factor. So that's my reasoning behind giving the thumbs up for that walk-off touchdown.
Yeah, and to me, I also heard some people complaining about, like, Dane Evans went in there and threw some passes, and he ended up throwing, like, he threw a couple longer ones. Look, if you're going to get your backup some game reps, you have to run the offense. You can't just go in there and have him hand
they
it off
want
twice.
That too. Yeah. They want that too, right? They want to impress. They want to show what they have. So, yeah, I mean, they're not going to not try. We did our thing. We put our backups in, and they kicked ass too. So what do you want? You know.
Well, and the thing is, it's not like he stood back there and was throwing 60-yard bombs either. They were just running their offense, and it's like, okay, yeah. Well, this is the scenario we're in, and this is what the situation called. Like Braylon Addison's third touchdown was literally a swing pass in the backfield that he broke and just ran it. Like, it wasn't like he threw it 60 yards down the field. Addison caught the ball, I think, behind the line of scrimmage. And took it to the house. Like, that's piss poor defense. Like, that has nothing to do with what the Ticats. If they would have pitched that out to, I think, Malik Irons or maybe even Jackson Bennett, I think it was Malik Irons, would have been in the game at that time. You pitch it out to him. If the Argos miss a tackle and he runs it 50 yards to the end zone, like, how is the offense supposed to be blamed for that? You know what I mean? Like, look, we a lot of backups got playing time in this. The defense, even, like, aside from, like, basically the offensive line, and even some offensive linemen came out. Like, I think at one point Van Zyl came out. And Kay Okafor went in. Like, backups played in this game once it got really out of hand. But you still got to run your offense. You still got to let these guys actually see what it's like in game reps. You can't just go out there and hand the ball off every play and then punt. Like, that's not doing these guys a service either. And, I mean, the way I look at it, it's professional football, professional sports. You don't like the other team scoring all that much on you? Stop them. That's your job.
Yeah, I don't think it was a case of the Tiger Cats trying to, you know, run up the score. They were running their offense, and I personally think that the Argonaut defense wasn't giving effort, you know, wasn't giving that full effort. You know, some of those touchdowns near the end, I mean, like you meant the one you just mentioned, he just like strolled into the end zone. It was like, wow, that was easy. So I don't think it was a case of the Tiger Cats, you know, trying to rub it in the Argos face. I think the Argonauts kind of gave up. So, you know,
can we dispel a rumor here too? Cause I'm seeing a lot of this online about, and I think some of it came from Glenn Suter's comments during the game that the Argos looked tired, that they weren't in game shape. Now, if that's the case, then there's a whole host of other problems. But can we dispel this rumor that the Argos defense was on the field for like half of – like three quarters of the game? Because it's just simply not true. I have the numbers in front of me. They were on the field for 31 minutes and 40 seconds versus Hamilton's defense, which was on for 28 minutes and 20 seconds. Like, That's a 3-minute, 20-second difference. Hamilton ran 10 more plays. Like, this isn't some massive discrepancy in how this happened. The Ticats, and I think I said it earlier, we looked at it, none of their touchdown drives were longer than 4 minutes long. So It's not like they were putting together these 7-minute, 8-minute, 14-play drives. It was quick strike. It was big plays. The Argos defense was tired. If they were tired, then that's their own, like, they weren't on the field all that much, so, like...
Yeah, I totally agree, yeah.
Yeah, I don't...
That was
don't
an excuse
really
from it, some of the Argos like fans, so...
And you know what I say to excuses, Mike? I say I say scoreboard, and I point at the scoreboard. Give me any excuse you want for why they lost, scoreboard. And in this one, I got two pictures of the scoreboard. One from the actual game, and I took a still shot of the scoreboard that TSN put up at the end of the game, because I'm going to put this up whenever I can to troll the
shit. I was writing 64-14 on things at work today. Just random 64-14. Like, why? People are like, what are these numbers? But anywho, what do you think?
We got to talk about special teams, don't we?
Oh, yeah, we do, actually. We do. I almost forgot about the special teams. Yes.
Because special teams were, like, we talked, we don't really have to get into the Brandon Banks return. The only thing I want to say is, in rewatching the game, Delvin Bro's out there on field goal coverage, I guess, and he seals a block, and Banks runs past him, and Banks is at Hamilton's 40-yard line, and Bro's already got his hand in the air going, it's over. Like, he's gone. You know what I mean?
And the there's a lot of great blocks on that missed field goal return.
I am
they
glad
really
you bring
helped out Brandon out a lot there.
Because I want to bring up one guy who I think we've talked about a lot over the years. Mike Daly, he's lost his starting job to Tunde Adeleke. He's back as a special teams guy. He had a couple of absolutely fantastic tackles in this one. Had a great tackle on Chris Rainey on a punt. But his block on Brandon Banks' missed field goal, he held a block and didn't commit a foul. Like, there was no, he wasn't holding. He just held his block for at least 3 or 4 seconds, and it essentially allowed Brandon Banks to score. Like, it was right in front of us too, where we were sitting, and you're just watching it going, like, Daly is really, like, holding that, and, like, the ref's looking at it, like, that's where the ball's going. And I just think Mike Daly, a guy who, you know, could, if you wanted to, could think, like, maybe he's a little, you know, sulky in a way because he's lost his starting position. Not a chance. He's out there making plays on special teams and contributing in a big way, both on blocks there, like that you brought up, because the blocks on that were great, his in particular, and in coverage. I just want to give a shout out to Mike Daly, because I thought on special teams he was a beast in this one.
Yeah, I totally agree. You pretty much stole everything I wanted to say.
Oh, I'm sorry, buddy.
No, it's all right.
How about this? I'll give this to you. Liram Hirelahu's really turned it around this year. 56-yard field goal. He had the one punt out of bounds, I know, but that came with – the game was over. So it didn't I don't care. I think he's been – I thought he was fantastic in this one. 3 for 3 on field goals. I think he's been fantastic so far this year. Mike, take it away.
Well, has he missed one yet?
Nope.
I don't think he's missed one yet. So, nope. Yeah, I mean, the guy has been great. You mentioned the punt out of bounds, but, yeah, it's garbage time. It doesn't matter. I'm not going to harp on him for that. He's been tremendous with the long field goals, as he's always been, with the 45-plus, 50-plus yarders. He's just been on target. I've been really, really impressed with Liram. I was a little bit concerned. I think I was more concerned than you were of the re-signing of him, but he's shown that I was wrong, and he's been doing a great job so far this season.
And I think the last thing we need to talk about from this game, because we spend an awful lot of time talking about this, and I don't think any Ticat fans listening to the show will complain about us spending over half an hour talking about this thrashing of the Argos. History was made in this one on special teams, as our global player, kicker by the name of Gabriel Amavisca Ortiz, became the first global player in CFL history to score a point. He had 2 converts in this one. So when the trivia question is ever asked in 50 years, who was the first global player to score points in a CFL game, it was our kicker.
Yeah, Eduardo Caroccia.
Nice Seinfeld reference.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. That's what I'm going to call him from now on. but it was pretty cool to see. I mean, you know, history's made, and good for that kid.
All right, so peek behind the curtain here, because I just realized we forgot to talk about this before we recorded. Podsky Player of the Week. We come up with what we're going to pick.
Well, I'm going to do it on the fly here. I'm going to call an audible, and if you agree with me, let me know. I'm going to have to, judging by the put the poll out, well, it wasn't a poll. I just said, tell me who you think the player of the game is, and the most responses back I got were for Braylon Addison.
Yeah, that's so. If we would have talked about this beforehand, Mike, I would have picked. That's who I would have picked.
All right, okay. So I mean, a lot of players had great games. You know, you could single out Mazzoli. He had a great game. You know, Sean Thomas Erlington, obviously. Brandon Banks, huge game. A couple players on defense. You know, the offensive line played great. But the Podsky Player of the Week for Week 2 goes to Braylon Addison. 6 receptions, 170 yards, 17.8 yard average, a long of 34, and most importantly, 3 touchdowns.
3.
Braylon Addison, congratulations. You are the Podsky Player of the Week.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that one. All right, Mike, let's move on to some Ticats news. Not a ton here, but they made some moves over the last week that we need to talk about. They have suspended offensive lineman Demetrius Rainey. That's a clerical thing. He's away from the team dealing with stuff. It's not like he's done anything wrong. But that's one of those things that they do so they can open up a roster spot for somebody else. They released 2 players, national linebacker Lucas Coral and international wide receiver Janarian Grant, which I thought was a surprise. He was one of those guys we talked about a couple of weeks ago that we thought after the preseason game here in Hamilton that, he could be this team's returner. So to see him cut before ever really getting a chance to play was a little surprising. Did that take you by surprise?
Yeah, a little bit, but you look at the job that Frankie Williams has done And, you know,
And
maybe he
Brandon
comes a little bit expensive.
Banks. They're putting Banks back there a little bit more now,
Yeah.
though.
Yeah. Obviously, he had the missed field goal return, but he also had a punt return for 29 yards, which isn't too shabby. So I think we're good in the returners. So, you know, I guess he was expendable.
And I think, I believe it was 2.5 was what was set for the team's return touchdowns this year by our buddy Adam when we did the over-unders. And I believe we both took the over, and after two games, the team has two. So they got 16 games to get one more return touchdown. So I think we're both going to get right on that hit of over 2.5 return touchdowns. Signings. The team signed three players. International defensive back Will Likely, who I think people will remember last year was with the Argos, and everyone made the jokes about his name. International wide receiver Jalen Marshall, another Jalen on the team. And a different spelling. All three of these Jalens that the team has had, Saunders, Acklin, and now Marshall, all spell their names differently. I don't get it. But the big one, and the one we're going to spend the most time talking about, Mike, they signed national wide receiver slash running back Anthony Coombs, formerly of the Argos. That is a big get, I think, for the Ticats. He is a versatile player, very similar to Sean Thomas Erlington. So another guy who could carry the ball if need be, but who has contributed mostly in the passing game throughout his career with the Argos. The big knock on him is his ability to stay healthy. Unfortunately, that's probably what doomed him most in Toronto. But getting another versatile weapon for this offense, another Canadian weapon, a guy who reminds me a lot of a guy I really liked from the last few years, Andre Dury. Reminds me a lot of Andre Dury. He's a guy who played for the Argos that I always had a ton of respect for. Really liked him. I was thrilled when I saw the signing. Mike, what did you think?
Yeah, I've always been really high on Anthony Coombs. He hasn't lived up to his potential yet. You mentioned the injuries that could be a big part of it, but the guy's talented. You know, you can put him in the slot. That's where he's been playing a lot with the Argonauts. But he also has a background as a running back. So with all our Canadians in that position, just add to the depth. They added another very, very capable, very, very talented Canadian player. And we already have that in spades. And we had another guy coming in. I mean, I was very, very happy about this signing. I think it's a great one.
Yeah, it's the Canadian thing is something that I don't think we can overlook. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, this team started 8 Canadians this past week. Let's see, Sean Thomas Erlington, Mike Filer, Van Zyl, Revenberg, Sirocco, Mike Jones. And then they started Adeleke and Teddy Laurent. Yeah, they did. They started 8 Canadians. And look, I don't think Coombs is going to be asked to be a starter for this team. I think you look at the running back situation, and obviously he's not going to supplant our boy Sean Thomas Erlington. You look at the receivers, and I don't really see him. Mike Jones usually plays the wide side receiver. Mike Jones isn't a slot back, so I can't really see Coombs replacing him as the team starter. And we've seen what these young guys can do. Tucker, Acklin have played really well. Again, Acklin also playing wide receiver, not really a position. You're not taking Addison or Banks off the field, and then once Luke Tasker comes back, he's a starter as well. So it's like there's not a slot back opening on this team. But in adding a talented Canadian player, you can bring him in and just let him make plays. Like, he's not going to have to maybe not being a starter, not being expected to carry the load as he was with Toronto. Maybe it keeps him healthy for a full season.
Yeah, maybe he comes in and he shows what he has, and, you know, at limited times, and you know, he works himself up through the depth chart and gets some more time on the field. But I just think it's a tremendous depth signing. I'm not sure what his injury status is at the moment. I don't know if you have any information on
that.
Well,
I know he was on the one game. I don't think he's necessarily hurt, and more just they want to get him up to speed. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, they want to get him some reps. They want to get him they just want to get him in. Like, I know it's Tommy Condell, and he was with Coombs the last couple of years in Toronto, but I think they just want to get him kind of up to speed on what the Ticats offense is going to be before they start deploying him. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if in a couple of weeks he's not back on the field and making plays for the Ticats.
Right. And, you know, it just – I know we harp on it a lot, our Canadian talent, but it just speaks to the volume of depth when you have a guy like Anthony Coombs come in who could be a starter on many, many teams, and we don't know where he figures in. You know, we don't know where to put him in the lineup because there's so much talent ahead of him right now.
Yeah, it's a good problem to have, no?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Okay, let's talk CFL news. And this kind of dovetails in a little bit with Ticats news here. Obviously, we talked last week about the suspension, the two-game suspension that was handed down to Simone Lawrence. Well, after we recorded, we found out, surprise, surprise, he's going to appeal that suspension. I think if you're shocked by that, you're a buffoon, quite frankly. I'm not going to mince words here. I know a lot of people on social media were like, how dare he? Or, you know, he did it. He should just accept his punishment. And, I mean, that's nonsense, but that's neither here nor there. But he's appealing his ban, his suspension. Not going to be heard till July 9th, which means he's going to play. Not only did he play against the Argos, he's going to play in the next two games, this back-to-back set that they have with the Owls. So he wouldn't miss a game until the week after, which is against the Calgary Stampeders here in Hamilton. So, Mike, when you heard the news that Simone was going to appeal, I can't imagine you were shocked, but what did you think? Because I've seen some takes out there, and I'm curious to get yours.
No, I wasn't surprised or anything like that. It's tough to really. They need. They're going to appeal no matter what. It doesn't matter what they did on the field. If they, you know, he had a chainsaw out there and he was cutting up legs, I'm pretty sure he's going to appeal. You know what I mean?
So, last Boy Scout running on the field with a gun in your belt and shooting people as you're trying to score touchdowns.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Oh, that's a good strategy. Actually, we should try that. But you know, it's a little disappointing that he just. I know he wouldn't just take it. You know, you have to be an idiot to think that, but it would have been a nice gesture if he was like, oh, okay, I did something wrong. I'll just take my punishment. We'll take the two games and then we'll move on with my life. Because, you know, I was a little harsh on him when it happened. It was an unnecessary hit. It was dirty. I didn't like it, but Simone isn't that kind of guy. He's not a dirty player like, you know, Hank likes to pretend he is and say all those untrue things on the panel. So, it is what it is, basically, Josh. You know, he's not going to appeal. We'll see how it goes. Maybe he gets knocked down to one. But I, in my opinion, he should just serve the two. Serve the two.
See, the appeal is happening because his defense is going to be, I've never been even fined for my on-field behavior. And you're jumping right to the largest suspension you've ever given up. Like, Kyrie St. Bear, we talked about this last week. Kyrie St. Bear, after years of doing these things, and is without a doubt a dirty player, or was a dirty player. He's no longer in the league, obviously. No one signed him this offseason. It took years for him to get two games. And you're going to – and again, we talked about it last week, and I don't want to rehash the debate from last week because that's not very interesting to listen to. I agree with the two-game ban. They want to set a new standard, and I totally understand that. I feel like no matter what, and people might say we're defending him because he's a Ticats player, and that maybe partially that's true, but I think no matter what player was the first one to do this year, this was going to be the punishment. Like, it could have been a guy like.
And it should be. And it should be, right?
I agree. I have no issues with the league wanting to come down heavy here, but I also understand the player's point of view in. You're suspending me for this, for the biggest suspension you've ever given anyone, and I've never done this before. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, it would be like if you got a parking ticket for the first time and they said, well, you're serving 90 days in jail. And it's like, wait, hold on. What? Like, right. Again, I agree that the punishment fits the crime, but I don't necessarily know if the punishment fits the criminal, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no past instances with him where he's been fired like that. And, you know, his hit on Hank was in the thigh. It wasn't in the knees. So let's just calm down with that.
Yeah, let's get that.
And we'll just move on from there. Yeah. And, you know, and listen, I've never played football. I wanted to when I was younger. I couldn't because I had a heart condition. I couldn't play contact sports. So it's hard for me to, you know, especially professional football. You know, it's hard for like Joe Blow like me or you to say,
hey, I played football.
I know you played football, but not professionally. Come on. It's hard.
No, I played professional basketball. And apparently now I'm playing professional baseball. You don't have a picture for the
talking about?
I played for the Atlanta Hawks.
Oh, okay.
Do you know?
Okay.
Do you
Yeah,
know?
it's very good.
Do you know? I now play for the. I think I'm the starting pitcher for the Boston Red Sox.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
Just rolling in the coin. Gonna borrow some money?
I'll lend you some coin.
All right, sounds good. But the point I was trying to get to is, it's hard to just stop on a dime when you're paid to hit players. You're paid to stop players from progressing down the field. So I'm just saying, we've never played professional football. It's hard to judge how easy it is just to stop on a dime or slow down. The play was dirty. He shouldn't have done it. But, you have to think about the other side of it too, right?
Well, and we also can't make him the poster boy for dirty hits because dirty hits are still happening. We mentioned last week Corey Greenwood laid a pretty dirty hit on Moses Mdou. There were a couple other ones this week. Nick Usher, I believe it was, for Edmonton, goes crown of the helmet in on Mike Riley as he's getting sacked. And I know fans in Edmonton were booing to the high heavens after the flag was thrown. But man, if you're an Edmonton fan and you've gone back and watched the footage, you know that that was a legitimate foul. Like that was Riley's getting sacked and Usher comes in to kind of clean it up and finish it off and goes helmet to helmet. And it's like,
Yeah.
okay, that's again, it's not maybe not as bad as the hit Simone laid, but I'm not comfortable with the outcome dictating the punishment. Zach Collaros has a history of concussions and him getting concussed, like Mike Riley gets up from them. You know what I mean? Like, is it fair that what if these roles were reversed and Usher hits, who's a rookie, no one's ever heard of really before, he hits Caleros and Simone hits Mike Riley. It's both plays are still wrong. You know what I mean? And then there was the
Yep.
McConnell Henry thing, and this to me, maybe on a viciousness scale, doesn't rank up there with Simone's hit on Caleros. But from an unnecessary standpoint, I think it absolutely, like this to me is suspension worthy. Dominic Davis is running out of the sidelines. He's shoved by a member of, I can't remember, I think it was Solomon Means, shoves him out of bounds. And McConnell Henry dips his shoulder and knocks Dominic Davis on the ground when he's like 6, 7 yards out of bounds. And I know Rider fans this week have been trying to defend Henry and going, oh, it's not as bad as Simone, stop making the comparison. Is it only not as bad because the outcome wasn't as bad? Like, what if Dominic Davis takes that hit and tears his ACL and he's out for the rest of the year? Are we still
Yeah.
okay with that happening? No. So it's like Randy Ambrosi came out and absolutely tore the CFLPA to shreds, talking about how he was disappointed in them. And I've written a piece for Three Down telling people why I'm disappointed in Randy Ambrosi for what he said. You can go read that on threedownnation.com if you'd like and call me names if you disagree with me or whatever. It's up to you. But he came out and said he was disappointed in this PA's actions and all this other stuff. Why has there been silence? Like, how is this okay? This is a quarterback who's now on the sidelines, feels like he's safe, and it's not like he ran into Henry. If you watch the footage, Henry literally dips his shoulder to make sure he knocks him down.
Yeah, he's
Like, to
trying to be
me,
slick about it. He's trying to be
he was like,
slick.
what, me? I didn't do anything. And in that sort of whole spiel that Ambrosi laid out against the PA, he talked about, we want to get unnecessary hits out of the game. Those are his words. It's literally in the thing. You can read it. It doesn't look, I'm not in any way defending what Simone Lawrence did, but in the heat of the game, at least they were both on the field. And in the heat of a game, you make mistakes, whether it's stupid stuff like that or a drop. You know what I mean? Like players on the field make mistakes all the time. Simone made a massive mistake and deserves whatever punishment eventually he gets from the league, from whomever. Henry was on the sidelines, Mike. Like, he wasn't in the play. He didn't even have his helmet on. Like, to me, that meets the very definition of unnecessary. And if we are being serious about getting this type of crap out of the game, he needs to sit at least a game because that, to me, meets the threshold for like, I can't think of a hit in any game that I've ever watched that could be deemed more unnecessary than a dude not on the field laying out a quarterback who is 5, 6, 7 yards on the sidelines.
Yeah, it was completely unnecessary. I agree with you there. And it's only Monday. I assume we'll hear something about this, and maybe the other. I think it was. I can't remember what other hit it was this weekend, but yeah, I think we'll be hearing something about that because that's a quarterback, running out of bounds. The play's over, and Buddy just puts his shoulder into him. And as soon as I saw it, I was like, oh, he meant to do that. Like, don't try to.
Absolutely, he
Don't
did.
try
Don't
to
even.
don't try to fool me,
Yeah.
trying to fool me personally, you know. So
he's out there upset. Going, I'm going to hit this quarterback, and Mike Graham from
Mike will never
know. Alberta will never figure this out.
Yes, yes, exactly. But yeah, it was a disgusting hit. You know, he definitely deserves, I think, at least if not a big fine, then a one game suspension for sure.
If the league is as serious about getting these types of things out of the game as they are, I don't think that hit doesn't deserve. Like, I think there's no way you can claim that a hit like that, which is the very definition of unnecessary, does not warrant a one game suspension. I just I don't see how you can think that.
No, it's taking a hit on a player that's not expecting to be hit at that moment. You know, it's way out of bounds, and I totally agree he should be suspended.
Okay, let's get over this. Let's talk the other two games this week, Mike. Let's give our thoughts on the other two. And there's only two games this week. There's only three games this week. It was very – when I came home from the Ticats game, I was like, man, I could really watch another football game right now. But maybe that's just because we won 64-14. And yes, I will continue to bring it up.
Yes.
First game of the week was a bit of a thriller. We just kind of talked about it a little bit. Ottawa and Saskatchewan had a pretty good back-and-forth affair, where the Red Blacks come out on top 44-41. Mike, my thought on this game is a question I want to pose to you, if that's all right with you. What are you more surprised by, the Red Blacks 2-0 start or the Riders 0-2 start?
I got to go Red Blacks 2-0 start. You know, when we were coming into the season, you know, it just seems so, you know, circus-like in Ottawa. You know, they're calling the plays with a group of coaches. They got Dominic Davis as their starting quarterback. They lose pretty much their whole offense. I'm shocked that the Red Blacks are 2-0. They go into Calgary, beat the friggin' Stampeders in a poor performance, really, by the offense of the Red Blacks. You know, Dominic Davis threw four interceptions. But this game, he comes in and has a doozy of a game. You know, I think he threw four touchdown passes. He looked phenomenal. The Red Blacks look really good. So I'm way more surprised at the 2-0 start from the Red Blacks compared to the 0-2 start from the Riders, because there were question marks about the Riders coming into the season as well.
I agree with you. You look at the Riders' opening schedule at Hamilton, at Ottawa. It doesn't surprise me that they lost both those games. At the beginning of the season, I would have looked at that schedule and go 1-1, lose to Hamilton, beat Ottawa. I didn't think that highly of the Red Blacks. Ottawa, everyone and their grandmother outside of Ottawa had them losing game one. Like, no one thought they were going to go into Calgary and beat the Stamps. And then during the game, even when Dominic Davis is throwing interception after interception after interception, it's like, okay, they're going to lose this anyway. So when they won that game, and then they get into a shootout where you're like, okay, Dominic Davis threw four interceptions a week ago. Are we even sure he should be a starting quarterback? Yeah, I'm much more – like I said at the beginning of the year when we did our preview show, I'm taking Ottawa to make the playoffs simply because every year they make me look like a goof when they go, you know, 10-8 or whatever and finish second or first in the East, and I look like a complete tool for not picking them. So I picked them to make the playoffs simply because I was tired of being looking like a moron. but – You look at their start and you go 2-0. I don't think anyone saw that coming. I think even Red Blacks fans, if you would have told them, what do you think is going to happen? You're in Calgary. You're at home to Saskatchewan. What's your record after two games? They would have said 1-1.
Yeah. Everybody would have picked that, I think. And you know, we're going to do a little new thing here. We're going to give some star ratings out, Josh, for this game. You know, out of five star rating, I give this game 4 stars. I thought it was a tremendous game to watch. Very entertaining. But you need to be spectacular to get to that 5-star rating. That Podsky 5-star rating is hard to reach, my friend.
Yeah,
so
I'm
going to give
score
4 stars.
You probably have to score 64 points and win by 50 to get a 5-star rating on this show, right?
Yes, yes.
All right, let's talk about the next game. BC and Edmonton. You were at this game live, I presume, being an Edmonton season ticket holder. Start of this game looked like it was going to be all BC and Mike Riley's return to Commonwealth. But then I don't know what happened, but Edmonton just turned something on in the second half here. Win this game 39-23. My big takeaway from this, Mike, and I guess you want to talk about this as well, because I think it's pretty obvious. Mike Riley got absolutely destroyed because BC's offensive line absolutely sucks.
Yeah. Yeah, he got pretty ugly there. I mean,
what, seven sacks, you got, I think?
Yeah, you got guys like Amondo Sewell in the middle, and they got a talented defensive line, and they were really beating up on BC. It got pretty ugly. I remember it wasn't a sack or anything like that. It was earlier on in the game, and Mike was running, Mike Riley, and he kind of got his legs taken out from underneath. He landed right on his helmet, right on his head, bounced right back up as Mike usually does. Yeah, you got to be concerned for his health. I mean, you got to protect your $800,000 asset, don't you?
You absolutely do. And I know they brought in Suk Chung and they gave him a ton of money. And I mean, they loaded up this team, but at some point you got to feel like maybe they need to run the football more. If I'm being kind of honest, like they
yeah, you got John White there, right?
They do.
So,
like
yeah,
I don't know. It just feels like they're. It's like you said, they give Mike Riley, you know, $750,000 and are like, you're going to lead us to, and that's great, but you can't just throw the ball 50 times every game. You have to balance that attack or else Mike Riley's not going to make, as tough as he is, he's not going to make it the rest of the season.
No, but the BC really did look good early on. You know, a guy that's really starting to catch my eye is Lamar Durant.
Yeah.
He had, a lot of hype coming out. When he was drafted into the league, he hasn't necessarily lived up to that hype, but he was kind of sitting behind some people in Calgary. I think he's going to come out into his own playing with Mike Riley this year. He had a touchdown early on. The BC offense looked really good early on, and then it completely shut down by the Edmonton defense. And, you know, Trevor Harris, two games in an Edmonton Eskimos uniform, and he's performed pretty damn well.
Yeah, it looks like he's picked right up where he left off last season. It's
and
it's
Greg Ellingson, a big game.
Yep.
You know, he showed why he's a top level receiver. He had a tremendous game. So him and Harris have found that connections that they had in Ottawa.
Yeah, I feel like I won't say slept on Trevor Harris, but I think we've had our doubts about Trevor Harris because it seems like every time he plays, he'll play well for 3 or 4 weeks, then he'll throw two kind of clunkers in there. You know what I mean? Like, there's been a lack of consistency with him, and I guess you could say the same thing about the guy that we cheer for here in Hamilton, but I don't know. He's always been in that, like, second tier to me, but he's really starting to put it together week in, week out. I will rave to the cows come home about his performance in the East Final. I don't care who it was against. I know he strafed our Ticats, but the performance he put together in that East Final is one of the greatest quarterbacking performances I've ever seen at any level in any league.
Yeah, but then in the next week he puts
he
in a can, performance can, at the Grey Cup.
Yeah,
so
he kind of pooped the bed in that one. But you know what? A lot, no one really played all that great in that Grey Cup, and I think a lot of that had to do with the field conditions. So I won't put a ton of heat on Harris for that one. But yeah, new offense. Like, I know he's familiar with Jason Moss from their time. Oh, actually, were they in? I don't think they were. No, they weren't. I was gonna say, they were in Toronto together. They weren't in Ottawa. Jason Moss was the quarterbacks coach in Toronto when Harris entered the league, and they won the Grey Cup. When it was Ray, Caleros, and Harris were the three quarterbacks in the Grey Cup team in 2012. So I guess he's got some familiarity with Jason Moss, but you know, bringing Greg Ellingson over obviously helps too. But man, Edmonton 2-0 as well. It's a bit of a surprise.
Yeah, it is a bit of a surprise. You know, there's a lot of question marks coming into the season, but I think they did well using the money that they would have paid Mike Riley to get other players in, you know, a number of players. You know, we talked about the linebackers they took from Hamilton. Trevor Harris comes in, Greg Ellingson. So I think they made some really good additions in the offseason.
All right.
But
star rating,
I give this. It was very entertaining early on. I thought it was going to be a close one. The Eskimos kind of pulled away, so I'm going to give it. I'm going to give it 3 stars because I still enjoyed watching the game.
The game didn't go down to the wire, so to me that knocks it down a little bit. I'll go 2.5 stars. I turned the game off before it was over, not because I was bored or it's just it was a 9 o'clock kickoff here in the East. It was after midnight when the game ended. The game was like, I don't know, maybe a minute or so left. They're up by 16, I think, at the time. Yeah, they won by 16. The game is over. I turned it off and went to bed. So I think because of the blowout nature of it and not having a rooting interest, it knocks it a little bit down for me. There's still some great stuff in this. But, yeah, I'll go 2.5 stars.
Yeah, that seems fair.
All right, Mike. We got Slapdick this week, and I'm just going to read this verbatim because it's it is something else. So after the Ticats throttled the Argos 64-4. I don't know if you heard, but they won 64-14. Do you know that?
No, really?
Yeah, 64-14. Wow. A crazy score, right? 64-14.
That's the biggest margin of victory, I think, maybe.
Yeah, tied for the large margin of victory of 50 points. Worst loss the Argos have ever suffered, 64-14. 64-14.
Okay.
Frank Ziccarelli of the Toronto Sun decided in his infinite wisdom to use his post-game piece to rip into Simone Lawrence. Not for any, like, yes, he touches on how he shouldn't have been playing, yada, yada, yada. But he gives that old man take of why are these kids having fun playing the game? They should take it more seriously. And I hate that shit. I've hated it for a long time. I hated Don Cherry when he does it. I just hate people who tell other people how to play the game. I'm just going to read this straight from the piece. There's no denying his talent, but Lawrence uses every opportunity as an exercise in self-promotion. He knows he's disliked by everyone outside the hammer. And yet, there he was in the third quarter, acting like a circus clown after he sacked Franklin with the Ticats up 34-6. It was a classless move by a completely clueless veteran who should know better. But then again, Lawrence has never conducted himself on the field with the degree of dignity most players of his ilk display. That's such horse shit. First, if Frank was paying any attention, he would know that the clown act that he was perpetrating on the field was a carbon copy of James Wilder Jr.'s stupid little taunt that he does every time he makes a big play. It's sports, for crying out loud. It's not that serious. I hate when I hear people call someone classless. It's almost as useless to me a term as when someone calls someone – everyone who does something nice is classy, and everyone who does something that you don't like is classless. It's a meaningless word as far as I'm concerned now. The Ticats are out there kicking the tar out of the Argos. Lawrence gets a massive sack to stop a drive. The Ticats get the ball back. I'm going to assume score a touchdown because that's what they did on six consecutive drives in this game. And this guy is worried about Lawrence taunting and showboating and having – like, I'm tired of people with this play the right way crap because – it always seems like it's a certain type of person telling another type of person how to do it. When we see Mike Riley pump his fists or Aaron Rodgers do the belt celebration or Bo Levi Mitchell go crazy, you know what I mean? Like when there's certain players that are allowed to do this stuff and there are certain players that are not. And I see no problem with any player ever celebrating making a big play. It's not like he tackled James Wilder Jr. 40 yards down the field and got up and did the pose. He got a big sack, got the Argos off the field, and got his team the ball back. Look, you're playing your arch rival. You're kicking the crap out of them. You're having a good time. I'm just tired of these old, out-of-touch men telling these young athletes how to behave on the field. I'm just sick of it.
Yeah. And it was 34-6. I mean, it wasn't 64-14. You know, I believe the Argonauts were driving on drive, for lack of a better word. So, you know, I think they just had a big play. Simone comes in, gets the big sack. You know, to me, it's just a case of a reporter being a cheerleader for the Argonauts. You know, he's just sticking up for his team. And, you know, there's people, you know, that's very, you know, regular in Toronto. You know, the Toronto media loves to cheer on their Toronto team with their little pom-poms and, you know, the Raptors and the Blue Jays. And, ooh, we love them so much. And, you know, there's not really reporting anymore. There's just cheerleading. So he's part of that whole scene. You know, they don't do for the Argonauts because, you know, the Toronto media, they're too cool for the CFL or whatever. But this guy, you know, he's been following the team for a long time. He's an interesting reporter. I mean, he's I've seen some things from him in the past that are questionable. This is at the top of the list. So, Yeah, it doesn't surprise me too much with that guy.
All right, let's move on. Let's end the show where we do every week. Let's talk about the upcoming game. Our Ticats are set to host the Montreal Alouettes this Friday at Tim Hortons Field. The Owls come in off a bye, and what was a pretty good, as much as any loss can be good, a good loss to Edmonton in week one, where they showed signs of life. They showed that maybe they won't be sort of the joke Owls that they've been in the past. They look like they're going to be a competitive team. Vernon Adams Jr., former Ticat for all of like 3 months, is going to start this game with your boy Tony Pumpkin out for 4 to 6 weeks with, I believe they said, a leg injury. Taylor Loeffler and Bo Lacombe will both miss this game. I mean, that's kind of a big blow to the Alouettes. I think especially Loeffler, he was a big free agent signing.
Yeah.
To lose him this early, I think that could pose some problems for them defensively against what is going to be a Ticats offense is going to come into this game very much riding a high after what they did against the Argos. The Cats are 2-0 for the first time in 15 years. They haven't been 3-0 since that same 2004 season. The Owls have been a bit of a doormat for the last few years. Are our Ticats going to get 3-0, Mike?
Obviously, I want to say yes. You know, we're going to have a lot of confidence coming into this game, which rightfully so we should. But we can't take the LOS lightly. You know, they do have a talented group of players. I do believe that Vernon Adams can be a very capable quarterback in this league if given a chance. So he's going to want to stick it to his former team. But yeah, I think we will. At the end of the day, I think we will be 3-0. Because to be honest, I just think that the Hamilton Tiger Cats are a much better team than the Montreal Alouettes. You know, player wise, you know, coaching wise, I think they're just better. So for that reason, I'm going to say that the Tiger Cats win, not by a huge margin. You know, it's not going to be by 50 points again, but I think that the Tiger Cats win by maybe a touchdown or 10 points or so.
Do you think the perpetual 500-ness of this team, like, what's it going to take for us to finally get, like, believe that this team is going to be a 10, 11, 12 win team? Is it going to be them getting to 12, like 12 wins before we finally go like, ah, maybe this team's pretty good? You know what I mean? Because like, they play poorly and win against the Riders, and that's a game in the past that they would have lost. Like they won that game by 6 and the Riders had the ball with like 50 seconds left. In two seasons ago, 3 seasons ago, the Riders would have driven down and scored a touchdown and won that game by 1. You know what I mean? Then they go in Toronto, and I picked for 3-down the Argos. I had a gut feeling the Argos were going to win. I said on this show last week, I was unsure of just, like you know what I mean? Like, they had the bad game, and it's like, are we getting our expectations too high? And then they go in there.
Which we do
that a lot. They go in there and they throttle the Argos. They win by 50. They score 64 points. Final score 64-14. And now they host an Owls team, and we're still sitting here going like, well, like, we can't take Montreal lightly. And I agree. I don't think you take any team in the CFL lightly. Like, the next time the Ticats and the Argos play, we're not going to sit here and go, well, they beat them by 50, 164-14, scoring 64 points. Like, they scored 64 points in a 64-14 50-point win. We're not going to – like, that's not going to play a role in how we feel in that game. You know, like, we know they're not going to go and score 64 points, beat them 64-14, and win by 50 again. You know what I mean?
Right.
Just to make sure everyone's aware, they won 64-14,
mm-hmm.
won by 50 points. They scored 64 points.
Slaughter.
But we're sitting here against a team that has been notoriously terrible for years. And we're, I don't know, maybe, touchdown win.
Well, that's the Ticat fandom in this, Josh. You know,
that's where I was going with this. Is it just, we just have that instinct of, okay, they're 2-0. We know they're going to be 2-2 at some point. They're going to be 3-3. So that means if the next 4 games, I got to lose 3 games. Well, I guess losing one to Montreal would make, you know what I mean? Like, is it just the innate Ticat fanness of not believing this team can be great until they actually are great that makes us just hem and haw on these issues?
Yeah, I think it is. I think it's just history. You know, we've been watching this team for, you know, 30 plus years. So, and there's been some good years in there, obviously, but for the most part, it's been up and down, 500 or terrible. But I listen, there's no reason why this team shouldn't be 5-0 going into the game against Calgary.
4-0.
Okay, sorry. 4-0 going into the game against Calgary. I thought there was an Ottawa game in there or something, but
No. It's these two against the Owls, then it's Calgary.
Okay, so for me, you win these four games, you go 4-0, and then if you beat Calgary, I don't know what their record's gonna be. Maybe they're falling off really badly too by the time these two teams match up, but it doesn't matter. Okay, the history is there. The Tiger Cats haven't beat the Stampeders in 50 years or whatever it is. So if you go 4-0 and you beat the Stampeders, I will believe that this team is the real effing deal. You know what I mean? We're gonna be over 500. We're gonna get to 11 or 12 wins. At that point, I'm fully in.
Okay, so I'm not saying this is gonna happen. Okay, but you talking there, I decided to look up the schedule to see who Calgary plays before we meet up in week five. They're at home to BC this week. You'd think that's gonna be a tough game, even though the Lions are obviously 0-2. The Stamps are coming off a bye. They almost never lose coming off a bye. They're at home. They almost never lose at home. But BC's not going to be a tough out. So it's possible. It's possible Calgary loses that game. A week later, they're in Saskatchewan. Now we can say what we want about the Riders. Maybe they're not very good. They're also 0-2. But going into anyone else's barn, it's tough to win. It is entirely possible. And I don't think it's more than likely that Calgary will be 2-1 entering the game when these two teams meet week five. But it is entirely possible that the Stampeders could be 0-3. They could be 1-2. I believe they'll be 2-1. But I'm just saying, it is not out of the realm of possibilities that the Stamps could be 0-3.
Yeah, and you got to think about that BC game. Clay Brooks is coming back. He's going to want to put a whooping on the Stampeders.
They're not the BC Lions aren't going to want to go start 0-3 because that puts them in a huge hole in the West.
Yeah, and all the hype around the BC Lions this year, they're not going to want to be 0-3. I don't know if they have a home game next, but they're not going to be. If they do, they're not going to be wanting to come home with an 0-3 record. This is the season they signed all these big players. They want the people in the stands, obviously. So to go 0-3 would be a pretty big disaster for the BC Lions. So they're going to be bringing everything they have against the Calgary Stampeders. So I would not be surprised if they're 1-2.
So let's say the Stamps enter that game against the Ticats are 4-0. We'll work on the assumption they beat the Owls twice. Again, we're not taking anything for granted that we're working on a hypothetical here. And let's say the Stamps enter the game 0-3, and Hamilton beats them, and Hamilton goes to 5-0, and the Stamps go to 0-4. Why is it, again, I know you said the history and all that, but in this one season, an undefeated team beating a winless team, take away who the teams are, that should not be a big deal. You know what I mean? But it will be. Like, that's the thing. Like, you beat a Calgary, even if Calgary is bad, it carries more weight than if they beat the Owls or if they beat the Argos, and, probably shouldn't, but it weirdly does. I always think that you can't control who you're playing. Like, the schedule's the schedule. It's not the Ticats' fault that they played the Riders and then the Argos. You know what I mean? Like, it could have very easily been they played Edmonton in week one and they played Calgary in week two, but that's just not the way the schedule worked. You can't help who you play. And if you just keep beating the teams in front of you, like, if they get 4-0 into Calgary and they lose to Calgary, they're still 4-1. To me, the sky's not going to fall if they're 4-1 after 5 weeks. And I think they host the Bombers after that, and they could be 4-2. And even then, I'm going to be like, okay, after the first six games, they're 4-2. If they go 4-2 in every third of the season, they go 4-2, they finish 12-6. And I don't care who they beat or who they lose to. They end the season 12-6. They're going to be first in the East, basically have a walk in the park to get to the Grey Cup. And I'm going to be happy. Like, I don't care who the team, and I know a lot of fans, and we saw it on the Podsky Twitter account, that it's like, who cares who they beat if they don't beat a team from the West? I don't care who they beat. I just want them to win games. And if they got to beat up against all the teams in the East and beat the also-rans and lose to the quote-unquote better teams, so be it. But if they finish with 12 wins, if they're 4-0 going into Calgary and Calgary beats them and they go, yeah, okay, I'll be pissed off they didn't go 5-0, but they'll be 4-1. And I'll be like, I'm okay with that. You told me at the beginning of the season, hey, man, after the first five games, Hamilton's going to be 4-1. I'd have taken it. I don't care who they would have lost to or who they would have beat.
No, yeah. We've always talked about how it'd be nice to get some wins early on in the season so you don't feel that pressure as much
Exactly.
late in the season. And if they could go 4-1, I would be thrilled with that. I
And
mean,
now,
obviously, I want them to beat Calgary as well, but if they don't, then they don't. And then we just move on from there and we go on to the next game.
it's crazy to me because we do you say that, and Ticats fans, not just us, but all Ticats are like, man, they're always pressing at the end of the season. They're pressing at the end of the season. Okay, well, they get to beat up on some all on some scrubs. No, like, no offense to the Owls, the Riders, or the Argos, but it's like maybe those are the three worst teams in the CFL this year. Maybe those are the three teams that don't make the playoffs. Okay, if the Ticats get to beat up on them early and they get four wins out of the gate, and then they only have to win like five games the rest of the year to, like, we've dealt with so many times with this team where they are battling back from a 1-3 start, a 1-4 start, an 0-8 start. You know what I mean? Like, we've spent so many
Yeah.
years just like it's always such a struggle. I don't
Take the
care.
wins when you can get them. Take the wins when you can get them. I mean,
Exactly. Exactly. Did
doesn't matter.
anyone after the Stamps beat the Ticats a couple of years ago, 60-1, go, well, oh, it doesn't matter. The Hamilton's terrible. Like, but who cares? No, Stamps fans were thrilled. They went 60-1. Why wouldn't you be puffing your chest out? Like, you don't score 60 points in a game very often. You don't beat a team by 59 very often. Ticats
I
just
will.
beat a team, their arch rival, by 50 points. They put 60, and I'm not saying this for comedic effect this time. I'm being serious. They scored 64 freaking points in this in the last game, and yet I have to read comments where people going, "Well, who cares? I don't get excited." Why are you a fan if that doesn't excite you?
Yeah, the Argonauts. I mean, it's funny. Someone mentioned, I'd rather be a close game, and like,
No!
no. When the Tiger Cats are playing, when the Rough Riders and the Red Blacks are playing, yes, I'd like to see a close, entertaining game because I don't care who wins that. But when the Tiger Cats are playing, beat the crap out of the other team. That's what I want to see. Okay, I don't want to be nail biting. It's fun to win a game in the last second. Yes. But I'd rather just beat the tar off them. You know what I mean? I don't care about close, entertaining games when it comes to the Tiger Cats.
I wish I could remember who said it, but someone replied to that comment with, I know it was a Red Blacks fan, but I can't remember which one it was. It was one that actually doesn't hate me, so it's a they're a rare breed.
Rare breed, yeah.
But he was like, no, I want my team to win every game 150-0, go undefeated, waltz through the playoffs, and win a Grey Cup. Like, why wouldn't you want that? Like, every game, what you just said is exactly how I feel. Every other game between every other team, let them be the best football games you've ever. Let them be 35, 34 thrillers with a touchdown on the last play of the game to win it. You get some plays on defense. You get some awesome. Like, make every other game that doesn't involve the Hamilton Tiger Cats the best game possible. And every time the Ticats play, give me a 50-0 slaughter where the game is over by halftime and they waltz their way to the Grey Cup. I don't need entertaining games with my team involved to enjoy them. I cannot tell you another game that I enjoyed as much as I enjoyed Saturday's game. That was a blast. Now, it helped. I had some great company at the game. It was a lot of fun watching the game. It was a lot of fun being there. They won by 50. How, if you're a fan of a team and your team wins by 50, do you still find something negative to say? It absolutely boggles my mind.
Yeah, I don't understand it either. Some people just like to complain. You want to see your team play great in all three phases of the game, and then
And
that's
that's what we
exactly what we
did.
saw.
And that's
Yeah.
exactly what we saw. They scored on offense, on defense, on special teams. They scored on, again, I'm not repeating this for comedic effect. We did the 64-14 thing a bunch. That was for giggles. They scored six straight touchdowns. You know, like, wrap your brain around that. And yet,
I don't care if that's against a college team from Saskatoon or something. Like six straight touchdown, drives. It's you don't hear about that very often. And to me, it was extremely entertaining to watch my team
absolutely.
produce the way that it did.
I just think back to that 2015 team, and until the Ticats roll like this and win a Grey Cup, I think we're always going to look at that 15 team pretty fondly and as the unfortunate what if of Hamilton football. But that summer when they were just – when they beat the Argos like 40 to 12 and they went into Edmonton and beat Edmonton, like it was like 49 to like 26 or something. When they were – they beat BC here, I think it was like 50 to 24. Like they were just crushing teams. That's what I want as a fan. I want to, like I said, I want the game over at halftime. I remember they played the Argos, and I think after the first 7 minutes, they were up 21-0. The game was over. That is the game I want to go to. That is the game I want to experience when my team is playing.
Can you imagine being a fan of a team and being, okay, the Tiger Cats scored a touchdown. Ooh, I hope the Argonauts score one to make it close.
Ridiculous. You know? Ridiculous. Yeah, oh, the Tiger Cats score a touchdown? I hope they get a pick six on the next play. Oh, they get the ball back to the Argos? Well, I hope he fumbles the kickoff and they scoop it up and score. You know what I mean? Like, that's – anyway, I guess we had a bit of a mini rant at the end here. But, hey, they're playing the Owls on Friday, and hopefully they get a win, and we can sit here next week and talk about a 3-0 Tiger Cats team. And my, oh, my, we're inching – you know, the more this team wins early, Mike, the more that 9-9 that you think they're going to be is looking less and less likely.
Well, that was my hope, you know. Predict it.
You were the reverse jinx.
Yes, the reverse jinx, Josh, the famous reverse jinx. It might have worked, but we'll see. We'll see.
You say that now, but little do you know when they go, 13-5, and we shave your eyebrows at Grey Cup.
No eyebrow shaving. I did not agree to this.
You didn't come up with anything, and I said I'd shave my beard if they went 9-9 or worse. So we got to shave something of you,
dude. Eyebrow shaving is different than beard shaving.
Okay, what about head?
I don't know if it'll grow back, though.
You're not bald. You have nice hair.
No, but I buzzed my hair when I was younger, and I don't know, it just changed. We'll figure something out, okay?
We will figure something out. But we are definitely – there's definitely going to be something on the line. You're not welching on a bet. We just haven't figured out what you'll have to do. Okay, like some people, someone sent me a DM when we were talking about this earlier in the year and said maybe get him to get a tattoo, but it's like, that's too permanent. Like, I want something like – that's why I'm always with let's shave your head, because then at least it'll grow back. But you're worried apparently that it won't.
Yeah.
I don't want to. I think a tattoo is too much. Like, I think that's –
yeah.
Because I'm never getting a tattoo. So if it was like, oh, loser gets a tattoo, it's like, well, I'm out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, but I have this thick, luscious beard that I've been growing for a decade that I'd be willing to part with. So we have to come up – with something. Maybe hold on. What if we shave your legs?
All right. I can do that. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's
from the knee down.
Sure. We'll shave your. Well, I really don't want you. Like, hey, I kind of want to do this in public at Grey Cup if we can, and I really don't want you sitting there with your bits and pieces hanging out. So let's go. We'll shave your calves down to your feet. And I don't know if you have hairy hobbit feet. I don't remember looking at your feet when we were together in Edmonton. I don't remember if you'd never wore socks, to be perfectly honest with you. But yes, how about that? My beard, nine and nine or worse, my beard comes off.
All right, and above,
and
obviously.
10 and 8 and above, we shave your thighs. Or not your thighs, your calves. Sorry.
Well, at least – yeah, okay. So knee down, and then I'll be more aerodynamic when I run. So
there you go.
Win-win.
And run.
No.
And then at least if that doesn't grow back, it won't be so bad.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm totally cool with not having leg hair. I can handle that.
Okay. You know what? We've come to an accord. I like it. And that was Podski Weaver for this week. I'm Josh Smith.
I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw.
64-14.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.